Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 2th of December, Anno Domini 2017, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. If you haven't noticed an update to your Mac OS High Sierra operating system this week, now might be a good time to make sure it got installed. It wasn't automatic installation, but check it. There's a major flaw in High Sierra that allows anyone with physical access to a Mac to gain system administrator access without so much as entering a password. That was late Tuesday that was announced, and on Wednesday, with great apology, Apple issued a software update that was made immediately available for download and was automatically installed in existing Macs, and will be if you haven't turned on your Mac since Wednesday. The vulnerability was publicly disclosed on Twitter Tuesday afternoon. It's not clear whether the problem was privately reported to Apple ahead of time, which is, of course, the encouraged practice when security vulnerabilities are uncovered. Apple maintains an invite-only bug bounty program, so whoever discovered the bug may not be in it. It does not affect Sierra, only High Sierra, or other. It does not affect previous Mac OS versions at all. When the problem is exploited, the user is authenticated into a system administrator account and is given full ability to view files, reset or change passwords for pre-existing users, and they can do anything. Root is the god mode on a computer. Apple ID email addresses tied to users on the Mac can be removed and altered as well. There are likely many more ways for someone taking advantage of the issue could wreak havoc on a Mac desktop or laptop. So make sure that update is installed. To be on the safe side, set a password for root. If, by the way, you have not updated to 10.13.1 and are only on 10.13 or something lower, and the patch did get automatically installed for you, but if you then update to 10.13.1, you have to reinstall the patch. So the patch itself is not part of 10.13.1. Theoretically, it'll be part of 10.13.2 or whatever, but not yet so far. So anyway, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is root access with no password in Mac OS. Your choices are, I'm patched, I'll check immediately, I don't care, and Max. So far, we have 26 votes. Most of you are Max. I don't care, I'm patched, and I'll check immediately in that order. So, and I know you'll have more to say. So if you scroll down on the left underneath Fascinating Stuff, which seems to get lower and lower every week, you'll find the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And so far, at least the first item under poll discussion is 2 December 17, root access with no password in Mac OS. And, of course, you can join us by giving us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
And that update is named at Security Update 2017-001. And you can check your update list to make sure that it came in.
And I will say this. Let me commend Apple on fixing this within 24 hours. That's kind of amazing.
Yep.
It shouldn't be amazing. But given what we've seen out of Apple, out of Microsoft, the fact that Apple fixed it within 24 hours was...
Jumped right on it.
Pretty flipping amazing.
Didn't have to wait for their monthly patch cycle.
Right.
Just, it's important, let's do it now.
And that's the way it should be, you know, when it's something serious like that, particularly when already everybody knows about it. That's the deal. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Rick from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Rick, what's up?
Hello, guys, good day. A little bit of a Windows patch problem. I did the last Windows 10 update, And when it was finished and said it was all done, I had no internet access, and it looked like it removed all my adapters and connections to Wi-Fi and everything else. I don't know if you've heard anything about this or know.
Was your machine originally Windows 8 or 7?
No, it's a brand new machine that came with 10.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
because I've seen and heard of that with updated machines because
from 7 or 8,
right? Because they've got the wrong set of drivers.
I did that on an Asus one that I had that exactly had it happen with an 8.1 was on that machine.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But I had not yet heard of it happening on a
brand new machine,
pristine 10. Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of curious just to see if you guys knew anything about it. I mean, what I did to fix it, I guess, I don't think I have the update now, but I rolled the machine back to the last good update or whatever you want to call it, and everything came back and is working fine.
Right.
Okay.
But now, whether or not I should try it again or...
I'd say no.
Okay.
Well, the other thing you might do is check with the manufacturer of your machine.
That's what I was going to say.
And see if there's updated drivers.
Okay.
That may fix the problem.
Before you put the Windows
on. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is before doing that, I'd be very hesitant. Like Nick was just saying, go back to the manufacturer and make sure they've got some newer updates. Because since you got a machine that was pristine with 10 on it, they've been probably updating a lot of their drivers, too.
Okay. So specific to what? Networking and things like that,
right,
updates?
Right. Well, what?
Ethernet
who made your machine?
It's a Dell.
Perfect. You have a number on your Dell machine. I forget
service
what they call
tag.
It. The service tag
service
number.
Service tag, yeah.
You can go to Dell's website, the support side of that, and put in that service tag, and they will tell you what updates are available for your machine.
And you just don't want to just do the network. You want to
do everything.
Anything that's there that's relative that needs updating.
Right, but I suspect you will find some networking or Ethernet card or whatever
video
updates.
And motherboard.
Wireless, whatever. Right, it might be motherboard. But anyway, do all those updates. And then, by the way, you will have those updates on your machine. So now if you do the upgrade, the Windows 10 update again, and they go away, you can reinstall them from the download.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thanks for the information. That's great. Have a great day.
You too. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
Yep. That is a little unusual, I have to admit. I haven't seen too much of that lately. But, yeah, it's an issue that Microsoft has had for a while, particularly with older machines that were updated to 10. The drivers at some point become incompatible with Windows 10. And you need to make sure that your machine is up to date. And, again, with a machine like Dell, you have a service tag number. You can enter that service tag at Dell's support website, and that will tell you any issues you have, any drivers you need to update for Windows. So that's really kind of nice. It's a nice feature that some machines have, but not every machine, which is too bad.
And similar issues in the Apple community too. The Apple update program updates your Apple stuff. Like the Microsoft updates, does the Microsoft stuff, doesn't necessarily update the third-party drivers.
Right.
So printer drivers, video card drivers, third-party applications, sort of as a general rule, before you put in any update, check compatibility. We had a couple machines come in the last week or so. People have upgraded to High Sierra, and something broke. And then we figure out some incompatible app they had that they hadn't touched in 3 years. That's part of it, too. You may not even be using these apps anymore.
Yeah.
But they're still in there.
Old programs that you might have installed eons ago.
Yeah, they're still in there. The drivers are still trying to load. And and suddenly now it's not compatible and your machine chokes.
Yep.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Cole from the Great White North of New York State, Richville, New York. Hi, Cole. What's up? Cole? Hello, Cole? I'm hearing nothing.
He ran to the restroom? Didn't expect to get on that quick, maybe?
I don't know. Cole? Are you there?
Evidently
he is not. Okay. Not a problem.
We'll try again.
Thanks anyway.
Call back.
Thanks for playing. Try again.
Exactly. He's up there near Ogdensburg in Richville, so who knows?
Ooh, my old stomping grounds.
There you go.
Yeah, I lived up in Ogdensburg close to a year and a half with my great-grandparents, and they lived right on the St. Lawrence Seaway. I remember sitting up there on Ford Street.
Yep.
Sitting up on the porch with my grandfather, and we'd watch the boats going up and down the St. Lawrence, and we'd try to guess the flag because you'd see it coming. All right, what country do you think this might be from?
Oh, yeah, nice.
And we'd wait, and he'd sit there and pull up the binoculars because we'd try to see it far away and just guess from the general color.
See, nowadays you just take a picture of it and ask Google.
I used to live in Ogden. Does that help?
No. In Ogden, New York?
Yeah.
Which is nowhere near Ogdensburg?
No. one of the western suburbs.
Yeah, right.
North of Riga.
Potsdam, places like that up there. Watertown, a friend from Watertown. Who actually had a... They're actually north of Watertown. I had a friend from Watertown who had pictures of him sledding out the second floor window.
Yep.
From his second floor window, there was a snowbank that went right up to the...
It was Rich from Colesville, not Cole from Richville. Maybe.
Oh, maybe. Who
Wexley.
Is it?
It's Wexley from... now I've forgotten because you guys... It's Wexley, though.
It's Wesley. Wesley, where are you calling from?
That's about 8 miles west
Wait.
Of Attica.
Okay, sorry, I didn't hear the city. Where are you?
Pardon?
We didn't hear the city. It wasn't... you weren't potted up yet. So where are you from?
Colesville.
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 Right.
That's about 8 miles west of Attica.
You weren't anywhere near it, Dave.
Well, the thing of it is, though, and I don't know what they did with the phone system.
We're not getting overdriven again, though.
No. We're not getting overdriven. But what happens is when people are calling, the volume on the phone is down to 1.
Oh,
so I'm sitting there trying to hit it to get the volume up.
That's why we're not overdriving it, because it's
right.
down so low.
So we can at least, so I can at least hear people, and I'm trying to do that while I'm talking to them. And
right. Anyway, Wesley, what's your question?
I have a question for Nick.
Yeah.
Last week you mentioned a book about Chromebook for seniors.
Yes.
Is that available in a paperback?
No, it is not. And let me tell you about Chromebooks for Seniors. It's a book that I wrote,
yes.
actually, and it is available as an ebook. And the reason it's not available as a paperback yet is because I have to get an actual ISBN number in order to do that.
Ah.
And I haven't. That hasn't all happened yet.
Okay.
When it has, I will certainly let everybody know. But I was caught short by the fact that I apparently need an ISBN number.
Any guesstimate how long?
No idea. I've never done it before in my life.
You can always download it and print it yourself.
That's true, you could. But it might be a little easier to wait for the paperback to be available on Amazon.
Okay, I'll remember that.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Yep, I have to get on that. As I was saying to these guys, I was very sick this week. Spent most of the week sleeping, so I didn't even get to it until... somewhat later in the week, and I don't even know what to do at this point, so I'll figure it out. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's a truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. So here we go. Through the magic of the Play Store, the official Microsoft Office apps have arrived on Chromebooks. At least the Chromebooks that have access
support
to the
it.
Play Store. It has been a long journey to get here, with random individual Chromebook models gaining and losing Office support for the past year. But now, according to a report from Chrome Unboxed, the Office suite is live on all Chromebooks. You need an Office 3 all Chromebooks that access the Play Store. You need an Office 365 subscription to actually save and edit a document, but if you're paying the $7 a month fee, you can now fire up the apps on a Chromebook. Okay.
Yeah,
the
really.
Play Store on Chromebooks brings Android apps to the formerly web-only platform for Microsoft Office. This means Chrome users get the Android tablet version of Word, Excel, Outlook, and PowerPoint. Microsoft's tablet apps are pretty good. They offer a big screen optimized interface that looks a lot like Windows apps, but with a smaller feature set. While most people are probably buying Chromebooks to use Google's suite of online services, having a fully offline capable copy of Office can be a handy thing to have in the tool chest. I don't know if it's handy enough to justify $7 a month, but okay. Yeah. If you really need to open a Word or Excel document without using Google Drive's conversion features, for whatever reason, now you can for a mere $7 a month. It's interesting to see Microsoft offer Office support on Chromebooks, which have been threatening Windows desktop dominance for some time. Microsoft is responding to the Chromebook threat with Windows 10S, a version of Windows that is locked down to the Windows Store. Windows Store apps, especially the new school Universal Windows Platform apps, are more constrained than the usual Windows applications, allowing for a more managed App Store experience. With the collapse of Windows Phone, Microsoft has been more open to bringing its apps to other platforms. The company has loaded up Android with Microsoft apps to the point it has even started selling Microsoft Edition Android phones in its stores. While we're sure Microsoft would rather you go the Windows 10S route, if you're on a Chromebook, the company now has a way to reach you with Office. And by the way, the free Office app viewers will expire in April, so no more free ride for you.
And, what does Chrome charge a month?
Zip, nada, niente, nothing, zero.
And when will that expire?
Never at all, no way.
And the free Google Docs can read Word, Excel, and PowerPoint files, right?
It's exactly right.
Yeah, and PowerPoint.
In fact, well, let me finish this, and then I'll tell you a story. Yeah. Is Microsoft Office Access on your Chromebook worth $7 a month to you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. I have had, over the years, I've been using Google's Office suite. Even when I was working, and I would often have faculty come to me and say, I can't open my Word document, it's corrupted. And I could open it either in LibreOffice or in Google Docs.
Mm-hmm.
Because with both of those, with Microsoft Office, if it gets to something that's corrupted and can't read it, it gives up, it just stops. Can't read this document, it's all screwed up. If either of the other two, LibreOffice or Google Docs, sees something like that, and frankly, LibreOffice is actually better at this than Google Docs is, they'll often just skip the bad part and go on and read the rest again. So I was often able to resurrect a document that was dead. And of course, none of my faculty ever made backups. You know who you are. and return it to them with 95% of the document there, just the one corrupted little area that they'd have to redo.
Redo, yeah.
And they're still mad.
And of course they're still mad. You couldn't get back all of it. I've performed a miracle. I'm sorry it wasn't specifically the miracle of loaves and fishes.
Never says, what have you done for him that instant?
Exactly.
I'm sorry. You did 2 seconds ago. What have you done for him now?
That's right. It's like giving somebody a ride somewhere, and I'm saying, you're dropping me off at the door? Yeah. What's wrong with the living room?
Yeah.
So anyway, the basic idea here is that there are many people, many people, in fact, who are using the Google Docs quite happily, and I don't necessarily see them needing Microsoft Office. Now, there are some features in Microsoft's Office suite, particularly the much more esoteric stuff in Excel, that are not available in any other Office suite. But those are also not available in the Excel app. So I'm not sure what it is you're getting for $7 a month, except Microsoft gets $7 a month.
The familiarity of Microsoft Office that you have at work.
I suppose.
But many businesses and school, especially schools now, are switching to Google Docs to not pay that Microsoft
fee. Yeah, it saves them money.
We actually ran into something kind of interesting this week. We had an MCC student come in with her computer for the getting ready for the new term, and wanted Microsoft Office. So normally it's $150 per user. So well, you know, maybe there's something in for MCC for students. No, faculty and staff. Excuse me.
Get them all choked up.
Yeah, faculty and staff can get it for $10.
Yep, they can.
Students, no discount.
No discount for students, and that's true in a lot of places. Many schools are now going to the Google Suite.
Yeah,
and they buy it for all the students at the school. I don't know if they buy it or they get. I don't know. I'm not. I don't run a school, but they get it for all the students at the school.
Well, a lot of schools are, as you know, Dennis was in here with his daughter,
right.
And they're all getting Chromebooks.
Right,
they're getting the tablets, and it's easy. Like we've discussed before, you can hand those tablets out to the kids. They can't mess them up. They can't get viruses. They can't get spyware. Can't get malware. They can load the apps that you want to have on there and lock it down.
Yep.
They're golden.
Yep, it's perfect. And for I see a lot of my college students are using Chromebooks now.
Yeah.
They've got a very high-end machine back in their dorm room that they play games on all night long and all of that stuff. But for class, they really don't need more than a Chromebook. Why pay for more?
Exactly.
It's ridiculous. So they bring a $200, $300 Chromebook to class. And they can do everything they want to do. If it gets stolen, that's sad, but not horrible, because all they have to do is change their password. They don't even have to change it, but they do, you should change their password. And then when they get their new Chromebook, pop it open and put in the new password, and everything comes back just the way it was originally. It's perfect.
It used to be the big companies would give up their software at a steep discount for students to get them addicted. So then when they got out into the real world, they had to pay a fortune.
It's the Jesuit saying, give me your child before he's seven, he's mine for life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we jokingly call it the crack model of give them a taste for
first
free.
First taste is free.
First taste is free, yeah. Well, so G Suite for Education is free. And then when you get out into the real world, Google Docs is still free.
Yep.
Yeah.
The worst thing for any company to support is mail.
Yeah.
Because so many people rely on it. If even one tiny little thing goes wrong, they hit the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's Google's problem. And oh, by the way, Google gives you, when you're using G Suite for Education, a massive amount of space. I mean a massive amount of space. The other beautiful thing is you really don't need mail as much as you used to. So faculty used to say, mail me your tests, or not your tests, but your papers and blah, 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 blah. Now it's just share your paper with me on Google Docs.
Yeah.
That's all. Done. Done. And students can collaborate.
The dog can't eat it anymore.
What?
The dog can't eat it anymore.
Exactly.
And the thing,
my electronic dog ate my electronic paper.
Was it Tamagotchi? Electronic
Tamagotchi's exactly right.
And just going from one computer to another, it doesn't make any difference if everything is up in Google.
That's
it's
exactly
just like
right.
Me going from one computer to the other, I didn't have to worry about my bookmarks, didn't have to worry about my emails, didn't have to worry about backing up documents and photos and all that other stuff because it's already up on the cloud.
That's exactly right.
So I was able to move from one machine to the other, and everything was there.
Yep.
All I had to do is sign into Google. It's there.
Yeah, and students are doing that all the time, too, because they've got their Chromebooks, and they're in class, and so in between classes, they might be working on a paper, whatever it happens to be, and then when they get home at night, it's there on their desktop, just the way it should be, and they can do whatever they need to do. And the beautiful thing is the collaboration. You can share a document with multiple people, and that multiple is large, by the way. Mm-hmm. And all of them can edit the same document simultaneously. They can talk to each other while they're editing it. They can see each other's edits in real time. It's amazing. And businesses are loving it, too.
Yeah.
And they're seeing that a lot. So it's very, very nice. They're very Google did a really good thing with Google Docs. People are very, very impressed and very happy with it. I have to say that. It's a pretty neat thing.
I used to work on an editing team ages ago, and you could see, you know, this person would make a change, the next person would make a change, the third person would put it back to the first way, the fourth person would put it back to the second way, and the document never ended up getting changed because everyone was fighting back and forth about how it should look. Being able to do it all at the same time and then fight at the same time
is
quite a bit easier.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is George, all the way from Vienna, Virginia. How are things in Vienna, George?
cold. They're very cold at the moment.
But cold being 50?
Pardon?
Cold being 50?
Or below, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a call. I got a question that circles back to your first caller today.
Sure.
I have a Dell machine that was an 8.1 and it got upgraded to 10. And I've had no problem with the 10 updates until now. And on this latest one, it goes to 54% and stops. And the question is, I do get Dell updates regularly, and I assumed that all the material I needed from Dell was included in the latest update. But the question I really have is there any safe and legal way for me to block this particular update on Windows 10?
Well, it's easy to block, and that's certainly legal, but it's not very safe because the updates are 99.9% of the time to fix a real problem.
Yeah.
But so what you should try first is, as we suggested to Rick, go up to Dell's website, put in your number, and download any updates for their hardware.
A lot of times those updates are broken down into important, critical, and optional. And the critical updates often come in automatically. The important updates may not.
Right, or certainly not the optionals.
Yeah.
The other thing you should probably do is before you do your upgrade, turn off your antivirus.
Okay.
Often enough, what we're finding is that if your antivirus is running, it thinks the upgrade is a virus because it's trying to change your machine.
Yeah.
So that's not something we recommend people do regularly, but you should definitely do it for an upgrade that goes wrong. And when you do that, please write a sticky note, stick it on your monitor to turn it back on again.
Okay, that's good advice. I have a McAfee antivirus program, and it should be easy to turn it off.
Many of them now have a pause for an hour, and then it will restart itself just in case. But it's a good idea to check to make sure.
Yeah.
And we can't stress enough to have a backup. You should have a backup all the time anyway, but especially before you do an upgrade.
Right.
Because when things go bad, you
just
can go back.
Just in case.
Yeah.
Okie doke. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, good luck.
Big help. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, it's updates are a problem. Now, Dave is about to tell us that Chromebooks update themselves without anybody ever having an issue ever.
Yeah, no, you just sit there and it does it.
But, I will tell you this. One time, the very first Chromebook I ever bought did an upgrade and completely borked. It was completely dead in the sense that it did not boot.
Mm-hmm.
So I turned it off and I waited a while, took a couple of deep breaths, turned it back on again. It came back up and said, there seems to be a problem. I will do a refresh. And it did a complete refresh of my system from Google's hidden website, and everything came back up perfectly after that.
Well, you know,
refreshing is that?
The Chromebook I had. I had one time, I don't know what happened. It was last year, and the thing locked up.
Yep.
And it wouldn't do anything. So I had to do the hard start and turn around and waited, you know, did its thing, came back up, said, sorry for the inconvenience, we're fixing the problem, and boom, waited a couple seconds. Everything was back there the way I had it. I mean, it's like, and that's fine.
Yeah, one of the reasons it can do that is I don't want to downplay it, but it's a glorified web browser.
Yes.
It can do a whole bunch of stuff in the web browser. A general purpose computer that can do a zillion things and has all this code loading and all these other drivers loading from 100 different manufacturers, that makes the whole thing much less stable and very easy to little one little tiny thing.
And we've
thing
been saying this
it.
For years. A lot of the issue with Windows and the Mac OS is the other software.
Yeah. Yep.
The non-Microsoft or non-Macintosh.
If you never install anything other than what came with your computer,
it is likely.
Likely to run perfectly fine.
Yeah. The way I best describe a Chromebook is like the old days, having a dumb terminal.
Yep.
You turn it on, it connects to the internet. It's there.
Yep.
And that's all you had to worry about. You turned on your old dumb terminal, it came up and it was connected. You didn't have to know about the other hardware and everything else. It just did it.
Yep. And you can do dang near anything. I have a friend who does audio editing, video editing, everything on his Chromebook. The only computer he has is a Chromebook. And he does video and audio editing for a living. So he's perfectly content, perfectly happy to get it all done that way, and loves his Chromebook. Anyway, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dr. Dave Enright, Dr. Steve Ray, Mr. Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, hey, we're Soundbites. A Canadian man has pleaded guilty, and yes, it's pleaded, not pled, guilty to hacking charges related to a 2014 spear phishing operation of Yahoo employees. The hack ultimately compromised 500 million Yahoo accounts. Do you have an account on Yahoo? You were compromised. The operative, Kareem Baratov, appeared in a San Francisco federal court on Tuesday afternoon. He also admitted that his role was to hack webmail accounts of individuals of interest to the FSB, which is the Russian Internal Security Service. Baratov then sent those passwords to his alleged conspirator, Dmitry Alexandrovich Dukachev, or something similar. Baratov was indicted in late February 2017 along with three other men who remain in Russia. The illegal hacking of private communications is a global problem that transcends political boundaries, said United States Attorney Brian Stretch in a statement. Cybercrime is not only a grave threat to personal privacy and security, but causes great financial harm to individuals who are hacked and costs the world economy hundreds of billions of dollars every year. The targeted attack allowed the four and possibly other unnamed parties to gain direct access to Yahoo's internal networks. Alexei Balan, a co-defendant hacker already wanted in the United States for a series of intrusions into the networks of e-commerce providers, is alleged to have conducted reconnaissance of Yahoo's networks. In the process, he discovered two key assets, according to the FBI, Yahoo's user database and an administrative tool called the account management tool. While in Yahoo's user databases, while the Yahoo's user database contents did not necessarily give him everything required to access individual user accounts, it did give Balan and two SFB agents information that could be used to locate and target specific accounts of interest. And the account management tool could be used to make alterations to targeted accounts, including password changes. Baratov, who waived extradition from Canada, is currently being detained in Northern California without bail. He was arrested in March in Ontario. Baratov's sentencing hearing is scheduled for February 20th of this coming year at 3 p.m. in the federal courthouse in San Francisco. So there'll be more about this story as time went on. So did you get caught in the Yahoo account grab? Hint, probably. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Later on, Yahoo had to admit that all of their 3 billion accounts were compromised.
Yep.
So as Nick said, if you have a Yahoo account, your account was compromised. The bad guys do know your Yahoo password. Change it immediately.
If you use that password anywhere else, yep, change it again.
Everywhere else, yep. Bruce Schneier recently testified before Congress on the Equifax breach and how horrible the breach was and the ramifications in the security world and how little the law can help consumers. Equifax had a minor stock drop, but it's bounced back up again.
Yep.
Even though now, virtually every American's confidential and private information has been leaked. And everything the bad guys need to steal your identity is now leaked.
Right. So if you have not changed all your passwords in a while, if you have not logged on to things like the Social Security Administration and places like that to lock down your own account, you should probably do that.
And put a credit freeze on your accounts if you can. The problem is there are several reporting agencies. Each has their own procedures for freezes and their own fees for freezing. So there's no and the credit reporting agencies, that's sort of the business that we know about. the data brokerage where they sell all the information they collect. That's what we don't know about, and that's where, you know, the money is, basically, at their end.
I know. The bad guys could have just paid for the information and gotten it legally.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so if you have an account anywhere with anything, ever, you should take steps to make sure it stays locked down. We see this all the time. People don't check their cable bills. Steve has talked about that a number of times. But they also don't check their bank statements.
You grumble about the bill, but you pay it anyway.
Right, right. And we don't check our bank statements, and we don't check any dividend statements that we get from places. We don't check any of those things. Those of you who have PayPal accounts, how much money do you have in it? And when was the last time anybody took money out of it? Not necessarily you. If you don't check those things, you don't know.
And PayPal has this weird rule that if you leave your money in there too long, they'll take it out and hold it for you.
Right,
and
right.
It takes forever to get it back.
Right. So every once in a while, I go in and drain the few dollars that are in there. That's a good thing. Other places, like if you have Google Ads, that's a little bit different. They will transfer it to your account when it reaches $100, I believe, is the lowest limit you can ask for. Those of us who make a buck or two a month have maybe, you know, 30, 40 bucks sitting in there. Oh, well, that is what it is.
High finances.
Yeah. High finance, exactly. Exactly right.
Well, and a lot of people,
I'm a Google mogul.
And a lot of people think that, well, I don't have any money. I don't have anything to steal. Your name is enough. The bad guys just want anonymity. They steal your name, and then the police find you instead of the bad guy.
Yep. Well, and I say that to my students all the time. They all say, well, I don't have to be careful because I don't have any money. Well, what you have is a pristine credit record.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes it real easy to take
which
out.
Which is theirs then.
Right. Right, which makes it real easy for someone who steals your identity to take out massive amounts of money on your name.
Yeah, because you got that good credit rating and everything else. You're outstanding. You pay your stuff on time and everything else. And then all of a sudden, wham, bam, slam, they just zap you from 16 ways from Sunday.
And even if you have bad credit, there's many credit card companies that will give you a credit card, and you know, just super high interest.
And they don't. And the bad guys don't care. They're never going to pay the interest.
No.
Yep.
So it is something you need to be aware of. And I know that makes it hard in this world. You got to take a little responsibility
until it happens to them once, and then they got to go through all the headaches and drudgery of, you know, proving that it's not them.
Right.
That could be one of your worst nightmares come true.
It's right. And it's easy. Many of us have had the experience of having a credit card stolen. And that experience these days has gotten to be much easier. I got a call from my bank a couple of years ago. They said, did you just make a purchase of fur coats in Florida? No. Then we will cancel that, and we'll issue you a new card. Very simple. But if that was a credit card company with a new credit card that is now maxed out, it ain't that simple, folks. Mm-hmm. It is years and years and years of paying lawyers to get you out of that.
Yep.
And if you get out of it at all.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it can be someone with a similar name of you that gets mixed in with your credit report, a clerk transposes a digit on an account number and someone else's account gets tied into your account. You need to check your credit reports.
I had that happen
all the time
with my late wife. There was another Lori Lynch.
Especially with women whose names change when they get married.
And this person, they kept calling us. All these places kept calling us looking for Lori Lynch. And they said, she'd answer certain questions. And, well, that's not me. And it turned out it was a lady down in Georgia.
Yeah.
And, I mean, for years they were calling, we need to resolve this. And Lori would sit there and say, yeah, go ahead. It's just not me. I live in New York. Where's this person? Well, you could have moved. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Check the Social Security numbers. Yeah, that would usually...
You moved, you changed the Social Security number, you changed your age, you changed...
Right.
Yeah, no. Never been there. You show me any proof that even shows. And finally, they...
I have a friend that travels to Canada a lot for work and conventions, and there's someone in the TSA system with the same name as him.
Oh, that's a nightmare.
And he gets stopped at every border. So he jokes about taking cookies to the border guards.
Yeah.
And this other person is 30 years younger than he is, a different race, 200 pounds heavier than he is, radically different. Just look at the pictures.
Right.
But he's got the same name.
But he's got the same name, and that's how they go on.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Last year, we went to my daughter's graduation ceremony in Arizona. And I breezed through the thing because our agent had put some sort of thing on it that said he's okay. I don't know what that is. I don't get it. Mm-hmm. But I breezed through. On the other hand, my wife got caught in the random search thing. They did everything that didn't involve undressing, and even ran a wand over hands searching for gunpowder residue.
Oh, the residue. Yep. Oh.
Yeah. And it's just, that was just random. I can't imagine how much worse it is if you actually come up on a list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I sometimes joke that I want to go to the airport after a day of launching rockets. I'm covered in black powder and ammonium perchlorate.
Yeah, that's probably not the day to go.
Yeah,
I got.
In fact, I might not launch a rocket for a month before I went to the airport.
I got you one just as equally as good. When I was going through radiation treatment.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
When they first had to test me and check out my bones and everything else.
Right, right.
I had to go to two different sessions where they literally put radium.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Into my system.
Yep.
And the rules were I couldn't be near any children under the age of 5.
Yep.
Not near pregnant women. And if I had to travel, let my doctor know he could give me a letter. Because the minute I got near the airport and started getting near security, I would set off all kinds of alarms.
Yep.
They warned me when I hit.
So my one friend who was picking me up one time, the second time I had to go, he says, tell you what, let's swing by the airport, and see if this is true. You SOB.
Yeah, exactly.
Be fun. Yeah, for who?
Yeah, for him it would be fun.
He'd take off and leave me there,
exactly,
and I'd have to be
right.
Calling. Yeah.
Yeah, they told me the same thing after I had a PET scan where they bombard you with anti-protons and you emit gamma rays.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I joked.
And you apparently didn't turn into the Hulk?
Well, that's because I was emitting gamma rays.
Oh,
I wasn't
right.
Absorbing them.
I'll go with you next time.
I asked them if they could reverse it. But I saw one of those border crossing shows was on, and it was in an airport, and an alarm went off, and the guards kind of looked at each other, and, well, what's that? Never heard that alarm before. It was the radiation alarm.
Radiation alarm.
And the guy had a note from his doctor waving it in his hand.
Right.
Well, that's one funny thing, though, is I have to go for my job through the federal building at least once a week.
Yeah.
I have to go in there to drop off a child. Believe it or not, there's a daycare down there.
Yeah.
So here I am with child in tow. They've gotten to know me that, I'm not going to be carrying some firearm for that. So with my keys and everything else, I set off an alarm. They go, yeah, you're
And okay. You can't carry a pocket knife either.
No. You have to take out anything.
Right.
The only thing I carry in there is with my belt buckle and my keys. So they know that that's what it is.
I haven't been without a pocket knife since I was like 8. It's very weird for me when I go to the airport to not have a pocket knife on me.
Yeah, I don't carry any of that. As a matter of fact, I said, do you want me to put the child down on the belt and you can run him through?
Yeah, right.
I lost my
they kind of laughed at that.
I lost my favorite pocket knife at the Statue of Liberty.
Yep.
They had airport-like security at this. No, I'm sorry, not Statue of Liberty. The Liberty Bell.
There you go, yes.
To get into that. So I tried to hide it on a wall around the corner, and it didn't make it. But that was my favorite pocket knife. I had that for years.
Yep. Somebody else knew that it's hiding.
I still had the tweezers. I always lose the tweezers.
Right. the Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
I still have this. I have my multi-tool.
Oh, yeah.
As they call it on Soundbites, the multi-tool.
Yeah.
Which you can't use a brand name. Mine happens to be a Buck, but that's neither here nor there. And that has multiple blades in it as well as multiple screwdrivers and everything else. And I have to remember, and I haven't been without this in probably 20 years. And you can't carry any of that stuff anymore.
Yeah, no, I don't. But
you can have it in your bag that you check.
Yeah. Yep.
And then once I get to, once I got to Arizona, I could put it back in my pocket, but
I just can't be carry-on.
Right.
Carry on person.
Right. Yeah, I have a friend who takes one of the things that you inject yourself with all the time.
Oh, EpiPen.
Yeah, some sort of EpiPen. Mm-hmm. And he had to check. Now it's actually on their website. But back then he had to check with them. He says, just in case I'm stuck in an airport for 48 hours.
Yeah.
Can I get it? Can I take my EpiPen? And they said yes. That was nice. All right, listen, you've wasted an hour with this nonsense, but we're not done. We're approximately half done. So we're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back on the other side of that with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, way too much of Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, all of your phone calls, more news. It's going to be ridiculously exciting. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more sound bites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a few minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. In case you didn't recognize the description, it's Soundbites. Right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. And every time I say member-supported, those of you who do indeed support this channel should feel pride all the way down to your toes. And we thank you. In fact, we were just talking about this, and here's a news story on it. For years, Comcast has been promising that it won't violate the principles of net neutrality, regardless of whether the government imposes any net neutrality rules. That meant that Comcast wouldn't block or throttle lawful internet traffic, and it wouldn't create fast lanes in order to collect tolls from web companies that want priority access over the Comcast network. But with Republican Ajit Pai now in charge of the Federal Communications Commission, Comcast's stance has changed. While the company still says it won't block or throttle internet content, it has dropped its promise about not instituting paid prioritization. Instead, Comcast now vaguely says that it won't discriminate against lawful content or impose anti-competitive paid prioritization. The change in wording suggests that Comcast may offer paid fast lanes to websites or other online services, such as video streaming providers, after Pi's FCC eliminates the net neutrality rules next month. With no FCC rules against paid fast lanes, it could be up to Comcast and indeed Spectrum and others to decide whether any specific prioritization deal is anti-competitive and before implementing it. Pai argues that the Federal Trade Commission and other antitrust authorities would take over regulation in this area, and the FTC could attempt to stop specific deals after they are put into the place. I laugh up my sleeve at that. But the FCC's enforcement powers are limited. As it turns out, Pai's final plan that will be voted on December 14th doesn't even ban blocking and throttling. Comcast, and indeed Spectrum and others, could thus pull back even further from its net neutrality promises, but as of last week, it was still promising that it won't block or throttle lawful internet traffic. Comcast promised to not discriminate, suggests that its paid prioritization would be available to anyone who wants it and can't afford it. Offering paid fast lanes to anyone at similar rates could help prevent the Federal Trade Commission from stepping in to block unfair trade practices. So are you ready to pay more for the same stuff you're getting now? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
There are several comments flying around. There are other countries that don't have net neutrality. And people are posting what their internet providers do, Vodafone in Australia and New Zealand. You want to look at web pages, you know, it's $50 a month. You want to look at Facebook and YouTube, it's, you know, $60 a month.
Right.
You want to look at Netflix, it's $80 a month.
Right. And let's not forget those of you.
So they're not throttling. You're not paying for a fast lane. You're paying to get to certain websites.
Right. And let us not forget those of you with Apple phones, iPhones, and AT&T, let us not forget that several years ago, AT&T blocked FaceTime.
Yep. Yeah.
Because they didn't want people to use it on their network. And it was net neutrality that got it back for you.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not forget those things.
And that vote is this next Friday, the 14th.
Right, next Friday the 14th. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. What's up, Steve?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm sure it's going to be simple for you. I'm running Windows 10. They just did an update last night, and I now have this People app thing on my taskbar.
Yep.
I'm not at all interested in the People app.
Yeah, Microsoft doesn't care.
I spent a lot of time trying to find out how to get rid of it.
It's basically the renamed contacts or address book. They've called
right.
it People now.
Yeah, I don't want it.
You should be able to right-click it and unpin it.
No, I can't.
No, you can't.
Really?
No. And I was hoping if I can't unpin it, you know that up arrow that gives you the hidden icons?
Yeah.
Is there a way to move it into that?
That's a very good question. I don't know of a way to do that.
I found a link. It's hiding in the settings now.
Oh, there you
go. Under personalization.
All right, Steve's going to post a link, and it'll tell you how to hide it at least.
Yeah.
You can't get rid of it, but you can at least hide it.
Well, you know, they keep putting things on the taskbar, and I want to put things on the taskbar.
Right, right. Well, here's
we'll get a bigger monitor, then you can have more space.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. Everybody wants to be your one-stop shop.
Yeah.
And they're making it harder to ignore that, you know, by giving you access to everything that they think you want. They're theoretically making your use of their system stickier,
yeah.
Right? It's all about stiction these days, all about stickiness. So you've got to know that they're going to keep doing this sort of thing, and that getting rid of it is going to be harder and harder. Right now, you can't get rid of that People app.
No, I tried.
Yeah, you can't. You can hide it, but you cannot get rid of it.
But if I could get it up in the hidden apps, at least it wouldn't be in my way. It would be out of the picture.
Yeah, Steve's going to put up a link in just a couple of minutes that'll...
It should be there now.
Okay, it should be there now. Then you should be able to hide it at least.
So, the app is still installed in the start menu if you want it, but it removes it from the taskbar.
Oh, just joy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you a lot, gentlemen. You guys have a good day.
All right, have fun.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's everyone wants to believe they're the only thing you've got loaded. I had a customer this week with a computer, a tablet, and a phone. She had a Microsoft email address and a Google email address. Some of her contacts were on the phone. Some of them were on Microsoft. Some of them were on Google. And she couldn't understand why she put a contact on her phone and it didn't show up on the tablet. Well, because you put it on the phone, not on the shared contact. So we had to move contacts among three different services and pick one service and just use that one.
Yep.
That makes it hard. And how is the average user supposed to know that? You know, you ask your IT staff at work.
Right.
But at home, you are the IT staff.
Right.
That's what we're here for. We're your IT staff.
We're your IT staff. And we will work for cookies. The big thing is that you're right. People don't quite get, and it's because nobody makes it clear they may understand easily the difference between what's on your phone and what's on the cloud and et cetera. But what app is on your phone and what app is in the cloud and where is it storing these data?
And you set up your Google email and it says, do you want to use it for contacts and calendars? And on is default.
Right.
And then you set up your Hotmail address and it does the same thing. On is default. And now the last one you did becomes the new default.
Right. Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Vic?
Hi, guys. I have a comment on something that was discussed last week, if I may.
Sure.
Somebody called up and was complaining about they couldn't set up a tablet. You know, they're having a hard time, and you brought up, well, you get what you pay for. Well, and no disrespect to Steve for the iPads, or iPods, one of them. I've got a Kindle, many Kindles, and they had a sale last week. $49.99 for an 8-inch, and they're terrific. They're clear. They're crystal clear. Text service is second to none, and it takes 10 minutes to set up. You know, I mean, I don't know what this person was talking about when they couldn't do it, but you don't ask for the codes to launch missiles. It's very, very simple. And as far as money on towards a tablet, I mean, $49 is not a lot of money, and yet they're a terrific tablet.
Well, and you're absolutely right. What Jason was talking about was his inability to do certain things with the tablet that he wanted to do. Jason is a more advanced user who doesn't want to just use the tablet the way it's set up.
Yeah, I want to load Autodesk to do 3D modeling.
Right. He wants
to
do...
You're not going to do that on a $49 tablet.
Right, but he wanted to do certain things that were not easily done on those types of tablets. Whereas with any of these, if you buy the tablet and only use the things that it came with, or that you get from its own store, you're probably not going to have much trouble. But when you want to do something a little out of the ordinary, doing it on the less expensive tablets is harder. Absolutely right.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that he was doing more specialized stuff.
But, yeah, and I agree with you. A Kindle is a very fine instrument for what it does. But, you know, if you want to buy books on Google Play, or you want to buy Nook books as well, or you know, some you get a special deal on something at Nook, or somebody gives you a credit card, one of those Barnes and Noble
gift cards.
Thank you. You can't necessarily do those easily on certain models of Kindles. Others that actually are kind of Google Android underneath. Maybe, but generally not, particularly not the $49 ones. And the $49 ones come with ads, and some people object to that. So it's really a matter of you get what you pay for, and you pay for what you get. And some people don't mind the ads and don't mind having to stick with what you're given. And some people want to strike out into the unknown, unfettered by commercialization, and doing that on a $49 tablet is a little harder than doing it on a $49 Kindle.
Yeah, and like most of the product lines, Amazon sells a bunch of different Kindles. They have a $39 Kindle and they have a $300 Kindle.
Right.
They read books, yeah, but you could do more on the other one.
Right. And so it depends on how far you want to go outside the constraints of the $39 tablet, and that's really all it was.
Oh, okay. Cause, I mean, I have like 800 books on mine, and I have no problem reading them. And,
you know, right, but he wanted to do more than just read books. He wanted to do other things that were not book-related.
Yeah, no, I understand that now. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, Victor. Yeah, I've been thinking about that as well. You know, you can buy those $50 tablets, and if all you want to do is put a couple of different readers on it, right. If you can get a $50 tablet that has a micro SD card, so you can up the storage, and then you can put the Kindle app and the Google app, Playbooks app, and the Nook app, and one of the free reader apps. So if you download something from archive.org, you can read that. It's a pretty complete ebook reader, but it's still not a pretty complete tablet. Right, the kind of things that people want to do on their tablets for a $50 tablet can be awfully slow if they can do them at all. And so that's really the deal that Jason was talking about last week. I'm putting words in Jason's mouth, but what the hell, he's in Altoona, PA, so he doesn't, what's he going to do, come up and find me?
we see the same sort of thing in people looking at computers. You always want to spend as little as possible,
right?
And so, you know, people will ask us, well, I want to surf the web. I want to send my email, and I want to play some games. Well, you might have just added a comma.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It depends on the games you want to play.
Yeah. Solitaire, fine.
Right.
You know, Halo, you added a comma.
Yeah, not so much. Well, that goes back to what I was saying about my students. They have desktops at home that are, you know, 32 gig, 64 gig, multiple monitors, giant cards that cost more than a desktop. And that's what they play their games on. But when they go to class, they don't need any of that.
Yeah.
They just need something to take notes on and read email and look at Facebook instead of paying attention to the teacher.
Yeah, I need a quiet keyboard.
You know who you are.
Yeah. I need a quiet keyboard.
Right, you need a they don't care about that.
I tend to type loudly, I guess. I've had people on the phone yell at me for typing too loud. Well, I'm trying to take notes about what we're talking about so other people can understand it.
Right, but. Right. I used to get the same thing. Particularly back in the days when you used the IBM clacky keyboards, which were the best.
I know people that wish they still had those clackety keyboards.
There's somebody who makes them.
There's a couple of companies that still make the big mechanical switch clackety keyboards.
Yep, those are great.
I hear a lot of professional writers hating the new keyboards on the new computers, especially the new Macs. There's very little throw at all.
Those little chiclet keyboards are terrible.
But hopefully it'll cut down on the carpal tunnel issues. That's...
Right.
That's the intent, at least.
Right. At home, I have one of those Wave keyboards, so I can type for hours without a lot of pain. But on any of these chiclet keyboards on any machine, it gets me in pain after a while. All right, we're going to take a quick break. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, with your phone calls, and with a whole lot more of this nonsense. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It is the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Paul from Brighton, New York, on the line. What's up, Paul?
Yeah, I've got a problem with my PC. It's an older PC, but it's worked pretty well. But recently, especially since, I'm not sure if it's right after I installed Windows 10, it boots up just fine right to the Windows screen. But if I want to get into the BIOS screen, where in the past with Windows 7, you just press, the F5 or F10 key?
Yeah.
You can get into it. Now they have this little menu that you press the Shift key and the Start key and the start, window button on the screen, anyway, you can supposedly get into the BIOS screen that way. With my PC, all I get is a black screen on the monitor. It never goes into the BIOS screen where you can see the various options.
Yeah, well, that's usually before it even gets to Windows.
Right.
So, when you do, if you turn the computer completely off, turn it on, usually it's F1, F2, or the delete key.
Delete or F12. What brand computer is it?
Well, it's an Asus motherboard that I put together myself some years ago.
Yeah, you may have to check to see what the key is on that.
Yeah, usually it's F1,
one.
F2.
F8.
And well, off
escape.
F8?
Yeah, and often you have to do it from a cold power on. It won't work from a warm reboot.
Yeah, reboot.
Yeah. Well, I've done that too, but I just get that black
screen. The escape key is one that they use quite a bit with the Asus.
Well, sometimes escape will clear like the Asus menu logo, and then you'll see the messages behind it.
Yeah. Usually it flashes on the screen very quickly to either boot from another device or how to get into the setup. And usually, like you say, it's F1 or F2.
And a lot of the new BIOSes do what do they call it? Fast boot.
Mm-hmm.
So you have like a second to catch that BIOS menu before it goes into Windows.
There is a fairly convoluted way to do it from Windows as well, and that involves going into update and security and Windows update and recovery and blah, 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 blah. Steve will publish a
part of it is a security precaution, because if someone has access to your computer for enough time to get into the BIOS, they can change the boot drive to something else and then at their leisure, you know, get into your machine and do stuff.
The reason I'm trying to do this is my audio stopped working, and I'm pretty sure all the device drivers are installed properly. When I go through the troubleshooting procedure that Windows offers, it indicates that the audio device is not plugged in. And in searching on the Internet, I found that's pretty common for some reason with Windows 10, and people find they have to go into the BIOS to re-enable their audio device.
Right, because it's on board.
So that's why I'm trying to do this, and I've got two obstacles. One is first to get the audio device working, and before I can do that, I need to get into the BIOS.
Do you still have the booklet for that machine?
Yeah, I've got it somewhere.
RTFM.
It should tell you.
Yeah.
But yeah, one of the things, if that booklet was from before Windows 10, it may not be updated enough. You might find what you need on the ASUS website, but also Steve has published on our website a fairly convoluted way to get into the BIOS in Windows 10.
Okay, I'll look at that. Thanks a lot.
All right.
I wonder, how new is your Windows 10 machine, I wonder? Because some of them are shifting from BIOS to
this is one that he upgraded.
This machine goes back about 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you can get into the UEFI settings anymore like you used to get into BIOS.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, the BIOS is going away. UEFI is going to be the thing in the future. So those of you who are new to computing, don't get too comfortable with the BIOS.
And there was another critical hole discovered in the Intel Management Engine.
I hate the Intel Management Engine. Why do we still have it? Come on, Intel, get your act together.
Somebody found that there's a JTAG interface that can easily be written to a USB key.
Right.
So someone can plug a USB key, which then goes back to the bad USB hack. You plug a USB key into your computer, and the bad guy can take over complete control of your BIOS. There's a little tiny Unix computer, it's a Minix computer, that tells the BIOS what to do, so the BIOS can launch the rest of the system. And the researchers are finding more and more problems in this management engine.
Right, because nobody ever put security in there. Intel just never did that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy, what's up?
Hey, Nick, how's it going today?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, we're doing real well. Just calling because it's the first week of the month, and Thursday will be the Google's meeting.
That's right.
So I figured I'd call and do my monthly plug.
Go for it.
Google's meeting for all things Google and Chrome will be this Thursday at St. John's Meadow from 7 till 9. And if you want to stay, you can go over to Zeb's afterwards and get something to eat.
Exactly right. We meet once a month. It's called Rochester Googles. There's a of course a Google Plus web page and also a Facebook page, and we meet the first Thursday of every month, and we get together and chit chat about all things Google. And if you have questions, bring them. If you have a Chromebook or a tablet or a phone that you're having an issue with, bring that. And we'll be happy to chit-chat about all of those things. We've had demos of various Chromebooks and the Google Home Mini and a whole bunch of other stuff that's very cool. So if you're at all interested in, and of course, the whole Google ecosystem, the Google Docs and Sheets and everything else. So if you're at all interested in any of that stuff, please join us. As Andy said, it's the first Thursday of every month, 7 o'clock. St. John's Meadow, and there you are. Thanks, Andy.
Not a problem, and we'll be talking to you.
Yes, you will. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, there are a lot of good meetings. What's going on at CIDR this month?
CIDR, we've got a couple of weeks left yet. It's December 13th. Second Wednesday of the month at East High School. We're going to be talking about virtual machines and emulators. A lot of times it's people need to run a Windows program on their Mac. But we're finding more and more emulators of old Macs. So if you have an old Apple II game or an old System 1 game, we found Dark Castle. that I wasted so much time playing in college.
And you probably still have the map in your head.
Yep. And I can still remember the sound those bats make when you hit them with a rock.
Yep.
A lot of people are still... Now, our modern computers, in fact, many times even your modern tablets are faster than the old computers back then, and being able to run a lot of that old software. And we're also going to be talking about some favorite websites as we move into the holiday season. Hanukkah is early this year, so happy Hanukkah to our Jewish listeners. And 22 shopping days left until...
Shut up.
The day?
Shut up.
I was talking to someone last night, and he said he's already done. I wanted to hit him.
Oh, I need his name. Need his name because I have a cane.
Yeah, we can...
It's exactly right. You're done, aren't you?
I have Amazon Prime, not afraid to use it. Free 2-day shipping.
Except that the USPS, UPS, not USPS, not the Postal Service, UPS, has publicly stated that anything shipped after the 22nd of November is not necessarily going to get there at the time they say it's going to get there. It could be up to a week late.
Don't
wait if you're shopping.
Our FedEx driver has been making Saturday deliveries.
Yep.
And he's still saying that there's too many packages to fit in the truck.
Yeah.
Still 3 weeks before Christmas.
Well, they were advertising. They're still hurting for drivers.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the packing companies need drivers, especially this time of year.
That's true all over the place.
Well, part of the problem is, at least it used to be UPS, you used to bid for the route.
Yep.
Mm. You know, how fast you could do the route.
Oh.
And people were killing themselves. They were just killing themselves in order to get the good routes and get them done fast.
Yeah, our guy says he could have 400 or 500 boxes in his truck and be able to go back and get another 400 in the afternoon.
Yep, that's exactly right. When I worked for a dealer, we would routinely get 30, 40 boxes every day, and the truck would come twice, three times. I would see, wouldn't necessarily stop for us, but I'd see him go by. And one day I was outside when he stopped next door. I said, "How many trips is this? This is my third trip today."
Yeah.
Now, he was a young,
strapping, that's for a lot younger person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was a young, strapping fella, but...
Not at our age.
Not at our age. No, sir. All right, Beck. Sorry.
I remember one time the driver was delivering a bunch of stuff to us, and the package I was waiting for that I'd tracked that said it was on the truck, he didn't bring it in. And I said, "Well, where's this box?" So, "Well, that's marked for afternoon delivery." "Well, you're here now. Can you give it to me?" "No, it's marked for afternoon delivery."
That's exactly right.
"And if I do that for everyone, I'll never make my morning delivery schedules."
That's exactly right. Because it's not packaged to be in the back of the truck.
Yep.
It's packaged to be in the middle of the truck. Yep.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jacob from Rochester, New York. Hi, Jacob. What's up?
Hi, gentlemen. A couple of days ago, I was just turning on my computer, and all of a sudden, this sign says "view" came up and left real quick. And then my computer became, huge, okay? The screen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I did everything I can. I tried everything that I think could be done, but in order to, scale back, I had to set the resolution back from the 100% to, 1152, and my fonts are a little messed up. I don't know what kind of fonts I had on the original one, I never had a problem before, but all of a sudden, bingo, it's, is there anything you can... that I have to do? I even tried to go to, go back to a certain point. That didn't help at all. Nothing.
Right. Now, let me ask a couple of questions. First, was there any sort of update, or did you add any specific software?
No, I don't do that. I just let it go, I don't really add on. I thought it goes on automatically,
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I get it. I don't know what specifically triggered what happened to you. Is it everything on the desktop or just one program or what?
No, it's the whole thing. And it's sort of like the fonts are a little bit, they're not sharp anymore.
It's the video driver.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, the fonts not being sharp means you're probably not using the recommended resolution for the monitor. When you go in to change the resolution...
I did. I've always had 124 times 768 recommended.
And whatever it says is recommended is what you should use.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one that specifically is good for that particular monitor. Now, it may well be that there was some sort of glitch in your video driver.
Okay.
So you might want to look again, as we've been saying to people today. Look on the manufacturer's website. If you're, what model is your computer?
It's an HP.
Okay.
Windows 10.
Yeah, so if you
I had to upgrade on it, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's about 6 years old.
Right. Well, in that case, it probably came with Windows 8 or 7?
Yes, 7.
Right. So what you need to do is go to HP's website and stick in your serial number and make sure that you have the latest set of drivers, well, for everything, but certainly for your video card in this particular case. Okay. It may well be that some update finally glitched out the driver. And whatever graphics card came with that machine might have an update.
Oh, so I go to HP site?
Right. Go to HP's website, which is, I believe, just HP.com.
Yeah, then there's a support button and a software and drivers button.
Yeah.
And then you can put in your serial number in order to find the drivers for your specific computer.
Okay, so what happens if then? Are they going to tell me the driver is no good or something?
Well, they're going to tell you what the latest drivers are, you can download them and then install them, and there will be instructions on how to do all of that.
Okay. Well, right now this is terrible. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it's clear you're not using the recommended resolution. But again, whatever the recommended resolution is may be way too large, and putting in the new drivers will let you change that without any problem.
Yeah, one thing I've been using a lot is the Zoom. You know, it's like 100%. Yeah. Is 100% a normal, or you go back, you play with that Zoom?
Yeah, 100% is actually normal, is regular. All right, we got to take a break.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ramey, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported Jazz 9.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
And you might as well jump.
And you might as well jump. And we have Jerry from Webster on the line. Hiya, Jerry. What's up?
Hi, guys. I have a question. I'm running Roadrunner for my email, Windows Live Mail. And I have an HP desktop. It's about 7 years old. On my email, and I try to delete some of the older emails, it says an unknown error has occurred, and I can't seem to delete them. I'm wondering if it's due to the age of the email or some other problem that I'm not aware of.
Okay, so you're using Windows Live Mail.
Yes.
Sorry, what?
Junk.
But now, stop.
It's the one that's built in.
And a lot of people tend to use it.
Junk.
Can you delete anything, or is it...
Yes, I can delete most items. Some of the items that are older, I can't, and some of the ones that... it's mostly the older ones. Once in a while, it's a new one, but mostly it's the older ones.
Yeah, it may well be that what your problem actually is that email no longer exists on the system. You've still got a pointer to it. But when that pointer goes out to the server, which is where your mail is actually kept on Windows Live Mail, it can't actually find it anywhere. Now, the other thing to check, of course, is does that particular email have a attachment?
No, it's just, for the most part, no. It's just the email. When you open it up, it just tells you what they want you to see. Not most of the time, no attachments, no.
All right, so you can open them, but you can't delete them.
Well, no, let me take that back. I can't delete them. I can't open them or delete them.
Yeah, right. And that's what leads me to think that they're just not there, and it's just a pointer that's gotten screwed up somehow.
Yeah.
There's a way to refresh the mailbox.
I was just going to say.
The hard way is to delete the account and re-add it. Well, let's back up half a step. Do you know if you have it set up as POP or IMAP?
It's a desktop. Is that what you...
No, the mail protocol you're using. POP mail downloads the mail to your computer, and IMAP mail leaves it on the server. And the message you're getting makes it sound like it's mail on the server that it can't find anymore.
That's possible, yes, because it is older, right. That might be it. I'm not sure of the answer there.
Yeah. And the usual way is you delete the mail account and then add it back. But if it is set up for POP, you're going to delete all your local mail, and then it only downloads.
Which would
mail.
Be bad.
Yeah.
One question. If I switched my emails gradually over to like a Gmail account, would this eliminate the problem? Would I encounter that again, do you think?
Well, no. Here's the deal with that. If you move over to an account, for example, on Gmail, you could start getting all your new mail there, and your old mail would stay in Windows Live Mail. That's the easiest way to do it. And eventually, you just stop using Windows Live Mail. And so you honestly just don't care if there's some outdated pointers in it because you're not looking at it anymore.
And it's more the protocol you use rather than the program you're using. So if you went to Roadrunner's website and use their webmail, you would be able to add and delete mail all the time. As Dave was alluding to earlier, Windows Live Mail isn't that good of a mail program. You could try downloading Thunderbird,
right,
and have it import all of your mail from Live Mail, and then set up your Roadrunner account for IMAP so that it can handle the mail better.
And I'm also wondering, because I had another person bring a computer in, and Microsoft Live Mail was all messed up. And again, you know, it's because some of these updates and everything else, that's all it takes is a small hiccup, and Windows, you know, gets totally trashed.
Yeah, you remember the Microsoft Inbox Repair Tool, where they were so used to Outlook crashing and losing your mail that they included an Inbox Repair Tool to fix it.
Rather than fix the program, they...
And it doesn't even work now.
That doesn't really work.
Not with Windows 10, because I tried doing it.
Right.
And there's companies that want $100 to straighten out your Live Mail account.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good business. All right, so here's one thing you can try. If you want to get a Gmail account, we recommend them because they're fast, they're easy, they're universal, you can get your mail anywhere, blah, 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 blah,
blah.
And
they have really good spam filters.
And they have really, really good spam filters.
Excellent.
You can also transfer all your contacts and emails from Windows Live Mail to Gmail. And Steve is putting up a post on how to, a link to a post on how to do that. Now, again, the caveat is at some point it will tell you it failed. And that's because it's still trying to get at those emails that don't exist any longer.
I see, yeah.
But you can just ignore that. I mean, it's it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? And so,
I'm sorry. I do. You mentioned webmail. I do use that when I'm away out of town on my laptop for webmail to get my email, and that doesn't seem to be a problem.
Right.
That's why we're thinking that your Windows Live Mail is set up for POP, which creates these problems, and IMAP would not.
Right.
Okay.
And you can get to your Gmail through obviously a web browser, so that would be fine.
Yeah. The irony is, you know, POP is a 35-year-old mail protocol. IMAP is only 30 years old.
You're right.
Yeah, and you know, this way, no matter where you are, you can just, whether it's your phone, a tablet, somebody else's computer, you can log in your Gmail account and get at all that stuff.
And basically any account that uses IMAP can do this.
Right. And the only hard thing for you, like Nick was saying, though, is you can import these all over. The biggest pain in the butt's going to be for you is notifying people of your new Gmail account name.
Yes, I realize that would be where most of the work would be, right?
Yeah, you know, just notifying me, I'm not using this email address anymore, I'm now using this one.
What I find is because most people reply to emails, once I send them an email from Gmail and keep and for about a month I hit them with don't forget to change my address, don't forget to change my address, they finally would do it and it would be okay.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll try that. Yeah. All right, thank you very much.
You're all right, welcome. Good luck. Thanks. Yeah, look, Windows Live Mail came with Windows, and so a lot of people started to use it, and I get that. But as Dave says, it's junk, and we're much better off.
It does. I was telling this one person, it doesn't take much of a hiccup for the PTS file to get messed up.
Right. Again, it's part of Microsoft's philosophy to put everything in one big file. That's the registry. It's the PTS file. Yeah. And all it takes is one tiny little glitch to completely lose everything in that file. It's a terrible way to store any information.
And that's a huge file. That PTS has got all their contacts, all the emails, everything's in there. And if you don't back it up, forget it.
Yep.
Your host.
Yep.
And there's a company now, because I tried to find the tool to redo that, like Steve was talking about.
Yeah.
Nope. Not in Windows 10. Companies are out there, and the lowest price I could find was $99 to buy their package, and that might straighten it out.
Might.
Yeah.
And if you've got an awful lot of email and you've never backed any of it up, and it's not existing anywhere but on your desktop, then yes, I get that you might need to do that, but to pay that, and it would be worth it. But for most people, no, it's really kind of not. And so if you're working with a company, one of the things that I love about Gmail, again, I got to say it, is there's something called Google Takeout, where you can go to takeout.google.com, I think it is. And I've just got it bookmarked and I do it every week. I go there and I say, I want all my mail. And it downloads it to my machine as a zip file. So I've got a backup of everything. And I go and I say, I want all my documents. And I do this all separately. You can do them all at once.
Mm-hmm.
But I do them separately so I have my mail in one zip file and et cetera, et cetera. So I do that with my photos. I do that with my documents. I do that with my mail. And that way, I've got backups that I can go back to if I need them. Now, you may not care to do that, and I understand that, although it takes a couple of minutes to make the clicks, and then you say notify me when it's done, and then you get an email that says this link is available for 24 hours. So as long as within 24 hours you look at your email and click on the link to download it, you're good to go, right?
And that means
that you have much more complete control over everything that you have. You know, I've said this before. If you're a system administrator like I was for 20 years, you cannot be paranoid enough. And so I believe in backing up the backups of the backups. And this lets me do that. Google, I know. Like I said, I know people at Google, and they back up their backups of their backups, too. But in addition to that, I back up the backups of my backups so that the likelihood that I will lose something that's actually important to me is very slim. Could it still happen? Of course.
All it takes is once, and then people have a very strong... Actually, no. We've had several customers where they've lost all their data. We sell them a backup drive. They come back a year later with another problem, and they never got around to putting the backup drive on.
Yep. Yep. And that's on them entirely. And
so now we're pushing wireless backup, so you don't have to remember to plug the backup drive in.
Right, you just have to start it at some point and put it on your network.
Yeah,
it's a very difficult thing to remind people. Back in the day, nobody had to do any of that stuff. But now you are your own system administrator, and that means security and backups and all the other hundreds of millions of things that we do. All right, look, that noise in the background, that beautiful music, tells us that we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back in just another week to bring you a lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You've been listening to the truly great, and truly grateful to each and every one of you that we are member-supported, and proud to say it, Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to each other, will you?